Welcome to the Perry Johnson Registrar's Food Safety Inc. podcast, where you can expect the latest news and discussions relevant to both the food safety industry as well as cannabis and hemp. Today's episode is a previously recorded webinar. If you would like to tune in to our upcoming webinars, visit our website at www.pjrfsi.com/webinars or give us a follow on your favorite podcast app. Thank you for tuning in.
Everyone, I'd like to welcome you to our presentation. This is the Interaction of Processes and Its Importance to a Successful Audit webinar. My name is Joseph Krolikowski. I am the QMS Program Manager for Perry Johnson Registrars. Now, our topics for today, we're going to have a couple of background comments and kind of give you a sense of where this requirement comes from. We will also talk a little bit about how this requirement is brought out of ISO 9001:2015. And we're going to do a bit of an examination on what is and what is not a process. It's a very specific term, and it needs to be understood in the correct way. And lastly, we'll go over some strategies for meeting the requirement with minimal changes to your existing documentation. So to begin with, if we dial the clock back some 8 years now, we were given a mandate from the accreditation bodies that accredit our system to take a harder line in our assessment of interaction of process or IOP documents. Now, the requirements that we are held accountable to are many, and probably the most prevalent of these is the ISO 17021 series of documents. Now, the Dash 1, which was published in 2015, has a clause that reads as follows. An audit program for the full certification cycle shall be developed to clearly identify the audit activities required to demonstrate that the client's management system fulfills the requirements for certification. So to break that down and kind of pull the essential piece out of it for this discussion, we are expected as a certification body to ensure that our auditors perform and document their audits and for those audits to be planned in such a way that they reflect the client's management system, your management system. Now, the way that that is to be done, the interpretation of that is we are supposed to adhere to the interaction of processes and only to the interaction of processes in the completion of the audit report. Now, if the interaction of process documentation does not do an effective job of identifying what the processes are, the auditor's job becomes exceedingly difficult. Our ability to plan out the audits based on your quality management system is exceedingly difficult. So we've told our auditors for many years now to write nonconformances in situations where the IOP does not identify the processes in an appropriate or effective manner. And in terms of where this is mandated by ISO 9001, there are three clauses at play that we point to. Two of these come from section 441. To begin with, you are required to identify the processes needed for the quality management system. And secondly, you need to determine the sequence and interaction of those processes. Then in 442, it says that you need to maintain documented information to support operation of processes. So those three items taken together, PJR's application, if you will, of those requirements states that you must have some form of documented interaction of processes, something that you can point to and say, these are our processes and this is how they interface with each other. Now, in terms of what is a process, we would turn to the definition from ISO 9000. This is a supplemental document, fundamentals and vocabulary, and this is the official definition for the term process. And it is defined as a set of interrelated or interacting activities that use inputs to deliver an intended result. Now, probably the key portion of this definition is in the phrase interrelated or interacting activities. This establishes what a process is not, and that is, it is not a single step. It needs to be understood as a series of activities focused on a shared goal. So, in terms of what we typically see as acceptable process designations, over the years, I've probably reviewed several thousand audit packages in my career with Perry Johnson. These process names that I've got on screen right now seem to come up most often. Lots of companies have a sales process. Lots of companies have a purchasing process, a production process, and so forth. Now, it's important to point out that as the owners of the quality management system, you need to make sure that your IOP reflects what you think your processes are. But that does not mean that we are going to just accept it blindly. We need to see in practice, are these in fact the processes that we are seeing? And it is okay for you to have a simple rendering of what your processes are. We have lots of clients that, for example, have established four processes, like I've got listed here, sales, purchasing, production, support. That's acceptable if it is a match for what we're actually seeing when we're performing the audits. In terms of what is not a process, the IOP documents that are going to get rejected the most and are going to potentially lead to non-conformances in an audit, typically these are going to be the IOPs that present steps within a single process. So, for example, if you've got an interaction of process and it lists these five items, create a work order, issue a production schedule, complete the work order, package the product, and ship the product. Now, in this example, it's definitely conceivable that these are parts of a single process, but in all likelihood, they are not processes by themselves. So that can be a problem. We also find issues with where there is an IOP document that presents sections from the applicable standard. So, for example, an ISO 9001 to be told that we have a process that we call operation. Well, that's the title of Section 8 of ISO 9001. It's not necessarily a process. Could be, it's conceivable that it could be, but it looks suspicious. An interaction, a process that is presented from a consultant, if it's something that hasn't been tailored to your operation, is potentially going to be concerning. So these are the types of IOP documents that might lead to nonconformances during the audit process. Now, in terms of adjusting your current documentation, we recognize that for a lot of organizations, particularly organizations with a long tenured system, you know, let's say that you've had your quality management system in place for 15 years and you've had the same IOP all along, and now you've come to Perry Johnson to get certified, and you're being told that this IOP document is not acceptable. We are well aware that that can be a little bit jarring, and you can feel like you did actually put quite a bit of effort into putting this together. So for those types of documents, you can definitely make a few tweaks, a few adjustments, and still meet the requirement in an effective way. So let me show you what I mean by that. We're going to review a sample of an interaction of process document, and we're going to apply two adjustments to it. We're going to begin by reviewing the raw IOP itself. Now, please note, this example was created solely for the purpose of this presentation. This is not from any particular PJR client. Okay, so here is our raw IOP. Now, as you can see, there are 12 steps on here and two decision diamonds. Now, it's conceivable that someone who didn't know better might say, well, these are our processes. But if you look at this a little more carefully, order entered into mainframe system, the second one from the left up top. Is that really a process by itself? Is that really a process for transferring inputs into outputs? You know, that's the key question. You have to remember what the definition for process is from the ISO 9000 document. So I think we can safely conclude this is not a representation of what the organization's processes are, not in the spirit intended by the standard. So the first thing we're going to do is identify support processes. And this is something else that we've seen in some of the IOP documents that get rejected. There's no identification of what the support areas are. Now, bear in mind, ISO 9000, 9001, they don't draw any particular distinction as far as classification of processes, but this is something that we see a lot, core processes, key processes versus support processes. As a result of that, it's often the case that the support processes get left off of the IOP. And support process, typically this is going to refer to things like management review, training, corrective action, and so forth. So let's apply this improvement to our test model. Okay, so now you can see in the lower right-hand corner, we have applied kind of a disconnected box. And I'm sure you can kind of understand the intent here. These support processes support the system at large. They support everything, the rest of the activities here. So now they have representation on this IOP also. Now the other thing we're going to do is create a key, which is going to identify what these processes are. Now this can be done by numbering, by alpha characters. We're going to do this via colors. I kind of jazz it up just a bit. And again, this enables the IOP to stay as is. We're not changing it, but it serves the quality system and the audit process by telling us what the processes are. So let's make that adjustment now. Okay, and now you can see in the lower left-hand corner, the organization has indicated that there are in fact six processes. As I mentioned before, we've still got the same 12 steps that we had before. We've added an item for support. The decision diamonds are still in place, but now we understand that these items represent six different processes: sales order entry, purchasing, production, shipping. Shipping happens to have its own step, that's fine. Quality and support. So now we've got something that we can use in an audit assessment. It tells us what the processes are, and it effectively identifies support activities. This is absolutely an IOP that would pass audit assessment. Now, it's important to understand that there's a lot of ways that this can be done. We've had a wide variety of methods that our clients have done over the years. So we'd like to share with you some additional examples that you can consider in preparing or revising your IOP. Now, each of these is from a current or former PJR client. Each of these was assessed in the context of an audit and found to be acceptable. And again, I want to emphasize, your IOP needs to be reflective of who you are. It needs to reflect your processes. That is the most important thing to consider. Here is a very simple example. Again, you'll note that support processes are kind of off by themselves, and we have sort of a top-down flow. And you'll note in some cases the unique nature of the process names here. They've got something that they call engineering. They've got a a separate process for production scheduling and so forth. Fairly straightforward. This is a rather unique model for processes. Again, off on the left here, you can note management related. We would take that potentially as being equivalent to what was referred to as support in some of these other processes. Additionally, we have the quotation process up top, and we have the work order receiving inspection item here. These are unique process names, and these are process names that are going to reflect very specifically on what this organization does. So again, make note of that. And they've got kind of a unique interaction between these processes also. This is a very unique model for processes. This is typically referred to as swim lane. To understand this, you have to kind of start on the left here. This organization has three core processes: sales, purchasing, production. And what's interesting about this model for processing, for understanding the processes, is that sales and purchasing, to a point, start independently of each other. A lot of organizations, the intent is that sales leads to purchasing or vice versa. Well, in this case, these two processes, the starting point is semi-independent. Now, they meet in the middle. When received, purchased items are received, leads to issuance of work orders, and then the both of them ultimately trigger the injection molding process that starts production. So swim lane can be kind of helpful for organizations with somewhat unique process modeling. The support processes, again, are shown along the bottom. And again, these reflect on a set of support activities that support the processes at large. Another unique item here, in this case, they opted to have the support activities called out as a kind of a set of individual processes, and each of them kind of each of them providing support to the overall picture at large. But obviously, in the middle here, we have these yellow highlighted items, and the organization is identified these as core processes. And okay, fine, that's a unique term, and again, you'll note that these are very uniquely named processes: service exchange, repair and return. This organization definitely put some thought into what the process names were. So in conclusion, we want to ensure that you are getting a value-added audit, but we also need to make sure that all applicable requirements are met. So it is our hope that you're going to use the points of our presentation today to have an even better understanding of what your processes are. I'd like to invite you to tune in for one of our other webinars. We have, for example, ISO 9001:2015, Knowing What to Expect to Ensure a Stress-Free Audit. We do that one about twice a year. It's an exploration of the common issues that come up in the ISO 9001 audits and what the expectations are. We also have a special presentation on exemptions and understanding what can and can't be excused in an audit assessment. We've got webinars on a whole lot of other things, stage one auditing, and several of the standards that we certify to. If you'd like to be kept informed of the latest news automatically, the best way for you to do that is to visit our website at www.pjr.com. Go to the bottom of the page, enter your email address in the provided space, and click subscribe. You will be opted in for automatic news updates on changes to the standards, upcoming webinars, and other points of interest. I do thank you for your time, and at this time, I'll be glad to take any questions that anybody has. Willie Robinson asks, do we have measures of effectiveness examples for each core realization process? Unfortunately, Willie, I do not. That strays a little too closely into the consulting realm. I can tell you that for most organizations, the measures of process effectiveness are going to be driven by, obviously, by company data, things that you would be tracking as an organization anyhow. And as long as it is measurable, something with a defined achievement point, most of the time it'll be acceptable. Are there any other questions I can answer today? Dennis Galori, I do hope I'm pronouncing that right. Would management be considered a support process? Potentially. It could certainly be classed that way. It would not be wrong to class it that way. Do support processes require a PEAR? That is the Process Effectiveness Assessment Report for the aerospace industry. I do not know, Dennis. I'm not well versed in aerospace auditing requirements. You would be better directing that question to a member of our aerospace team. Okay, well, thank you all very much for your time. Have a great day.